breakthrough in the science world today as researchers were able to successfully teach a father how to communicate his emotions with rudimentary hand gestures. The stunning development happened after Stanford researchers spent 9 months trying to train 42-year-old Pittsburgh father Ron Myers to express simple sentiments like pride and love in a way few thought possible. To conduct the study, researchers used large, simplistic diagrams depicting hand gestures a dad might use to show emotion in a way Ron could easily comprehend. Researchers say it was also important to keep Ron in a familiar environment that reminded him of his natural habitat so he could more easily transition the basic emotions he learned from the test lab to his home.
We would often leave Band of Brothers or 30 for 30 reruns on to help him stay comfortable. We'd also allow him to play blackjack on his phone when he got angry to help keep him calm.
When Ron was able to successfully identify an emotion, he was given rewards to reinforce good behavior, including buffalo wings or a moment to read a page of a Tom Clancy novel. Despite Ron's breakthrough, researchers say he still has a way to go before achieving full emotional maturity, as after several months of work with Ron, he still retreats to the corner of the lab to look up drywalling techniques on the internet whenever his real family drops by to see him. Coming up next, astronomers speculate that black holes could be how the universe eats.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound, a dimension of sight, a dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into...
The sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way. The sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way, when there is no sun to light the way. They told me it was incorrect to say that I died. They said what actually happened is I had a near-death experience and I was protected. And I don't pray to the Son of Man. I pray to the God that the Son of Man prayed to. I pray to the God that created the sun, you dig? I pray to the God that created all the suns, moons, and stars, you heard? I pray to the one that is and always will be, all that is and never was, the solitary, authentic whole in any and all existence, the only proper use of the concept one. And the Creator has a master plan, and Armageddon is ensuing more rapidly, and when I said I don't believe in hell, I was technically correct because I didn't believe it, but now I've seen it, so I have to receive it. In fact, to be accurate, I've seen a few of them, and I'm not talking about hell on earth, and anyone who perpetuates hell on earth will eventually learn that the actual hells wax far, far worse. And if you want to know if you're living right here, I can actually explain it to you simply right here. All you have to do is give and receive love, place nothing above God and your family, recognize you're just a reflection of God's love, so there can be no use for big egos or petty vanity. And celebrities are like meaningless sex because often they're just distractions, and if you believe I've achieved any level of success, then you too should study the laws of attraction. And conversely, when celebrities try to sell our children on self-hate, it's them same laws of attraction that magnetize us to want to smack them. And you can tell them I'm very easy to find online. My tour schedule is always available at TalamAC.com, you heard? But if they approach me and know not God, then their brags about crime best have been true word for me, word. What if this is God's work is a rhetorical question, and I pray to the God that manifests beyond X, Y, Z, and T axes. I pray to the God that manifests in infinite dimensions, the one that controls descent and ascension, the one that controls darkness and light, the one that controls opaque and translucent. And my frenemies keep telling me not to do it. Don't tell people to pray to the one indivisible God when they've already been taught to pray to Christ. But like the last poet said, time is running out, and our situation is too seriously urgent for any of us to not be teaching right. And if you think I'm teaching wrong, I'm open-minded, and that's your choice. And if you really believe it, you should hit the streets and spread your gospel and your voice. But I don't get to tell people to pray to a man and a ghost. And if my frenemies don't like it, it's okay. Because like Stevie Wonder said, they won't go when I go. In fact, when they go, they probably won't go where I go. Armageddon is not moving slowly. I was created by God to praise God, and men were trained by men to pray to a man, and Armageddon is ensuing more rapidly, and apocalypse is ensuing more rapidly, and cataclysm is ensuing more rapidly, and the sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way. The sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way. When there is no sun to light the way, there is hell to pay. And I wasn't given harmony or melody. I was given symphony with timpani drums. And if he simply comes in peace and love, then we'll essentially become what teachers are of and eventually get the strum of chord that reaches above and leave it to future poets to herald the sum of what each of us was. So what I gotta do? What I gotta say, when I gotta break, where I gotta take, why I gotta prove parlance and cadence to make them all stare at me like Edgar Allan Poe's Raven. They don't even know what I be saying, but they think I'm popular, so they copy what I be saying. And I get it from the source, so I just be obeying, and they could even approach me in my sleep. I can still tell when to stop and when to start, because I can feel when the pressures in their heart say win. All true fear says lose. All true belief says win. Jinyame, God and fear do not occupy the same space, and living love is the message is our job. And if you've ever felt any twinge of fears, because none of us ever was or ever will be God. But if you're full of fear, go. Just recognize what you've been offered is modern meditation for focus. And when you see me looking at the sky, I'm looking past the sky. The sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way. The sky is a sea of darkness when there is no sun to light the way. When there is no sun to light the way, we pull together. Harambe, when there is no sun to light the way, we honor life. Ife, when there is no sun to light the way, there is no day. There is no day. It is so. Ashe.
Cold as a night without you here. Just your absence ringing in my ears. And hard as the heart that feels no fear. Cause without the bad, the good disappears. Along is the road that leads me home. And longer still when I walk alone. Bitter is the thought of all that time spent searching for something I'll never find. Take this burden away from me and bury it before it buries me.
Many are the days I've wanted to cease, lay myself down and find some relief. Heavy is the head that gets no sleep. We carry our lives around in our memories. So take away this apathy.
Steady is the hand that's come to terms with the lessons it has had to learn. And I've seen the things that I must do. But Lord, this road is meant for two. So I'm waiting here for you.
So take my hand and set me free. Take my burdens and bury them deep. Take this burden away from me. Bury it before, bury it before, bury it before.
It's the story that's stunning the tech world. Despite his age, 6-year-old data entry prodigy Jeffrey Peters is already entertaining offers from dozens of major temp agencies. Experts say Jeffrey's abilities to sit still and perform mind-numbing tasks in Excel and Word for hours on end rank with a freelance worker 3 times his age. But Jeffrey's mom says that she knew he was special from early on.
I've always thought that Jeffrey was different from the other kids. He started wearing glasses for computer strain when he was just 3 and a half, and he already has some pretty significant tendonitis.
I've always wanted to work at Maverick Recruiting.
The data entry whiz is at the center of a bidding war between industry titans like Workforce Solutions and Metropolitan Staffing, both offering lavish perks like starting salaries of up to $15,000 and a cramped cubicle shared with only two other temps.
The way that Jeffrey never complains about lower back pain and always eats lunch at his desk is astounding for someone his age. And we'll do anything short of giving him benefits or full-time position to get him on our team.
Jeffrey's parents say that given the generous offers he's already received, he could be well on the way to affording a dingy rundown apartment of his own.
I'm going to live in a studio and microwave all my meals.
Recruiters also noted that Jeffrey is so far ahead of the curve that he could soon start showing actual signs of clinical depression at being stuck in a dead-end temp job for the rest of his life.
I got up this morning, put on my shoes, tied my shoes.
Five-year-old Liz Gayton has been charged with kidnapping and child endangerment after allegedly trying to sell off her 10-month-old daughter to a cousin this weekend, just steps from their grandmother's house.
And then Susie came back in and said, I don't believe that girl. She said she told me if I gave her $400 or $500, then she'll let me have Annabelle.
With that, they hatched a plan to see if she could really be serious.
So she came back out talking to her and she told her, well, I'll drop her off at my house tomorrow and I'll have the money for you.
The next day, the deal went down along Detroit on the Near West Side, and by then, police were involved.
They were there waiting on her when she came over.
According to family, Liz has problems with drugs and debt to go with it, which is why she likely needed the money. What her family says she needs more is help, and they're hoping this lesson leads to that.
After raising her for 25 years and doing everything to help her, it just really hurt for her to turn against me like that. And to be treating one of her kids like that. And right now, I really don't have anything to do with the mother.
Sister, please, can't you see that you're breaking the hearts of the people that you need? Sister, please, don't you know that the ones that you love the most are gonna go? I know
11 Metro Police called to an East Side motel early this morning. A pregnant woman says she was assaulted in her room.
Police are now looking for a person of interest, but it's what she told police about her background that will shock you. Our Drew Smith picks up the story near 38th and Shadeland.
The victim tells me that she invited the father of her unborn child to her hotel room to have a good time. But after several hours, things got out of control.
It was too much to drink. It was too much to drink, and it just went too far.
Had you been drinking also?
Yes.
Okay.
I had earlier that day.
Kianga Modupe says too much alcohol is what led to her assault.
He grabbed me. He took my clothes off. He grabbed me by my throat. I was trying to leave. He grabbed me.
Uh-huh. Okay. See the scratches there.
He grabbed me and threw me back in the room.
She says the man then took her cell phone battery. She says she had to go to the motel lobby to call police.
I had to run to the office naked, barefooted.
But she says the person at the office would not let her use the phone, so she had to go back to her room.
The way I got away was waited for him to go to sleep.
She did manage to call police, who responded shortly before 5 a.m.
Detectives on our domestic violence unit are actively investigating us to kind of see if we can piece exactly what happened.
But there's a bizarre twist to this story.
According to the police report, it says that you have 20 children.
I do.
You have 20 children.
I have 20 children. I have 15 out my body, and I adopted 5 children. And I'm pregnant now, so this will be my 21st.
Modupe claims to be 44 years old with 15 sons and 5 daughters, including 3 sets of twins. She told me that she wants the man who assaulted her arrested.
I'm still shook up and very sore, hurt, bruised.
And concerning her unborn child, which will be her 21st, Kianga says she's going to drive herself to the hospital to get checked out tomorrow. Reporting on the East Side, Drew Smith, RTV6.
The victim says she is 3 months pregnant and believes her unborn child is a girl.
I should be back home with her instead of here with you.
And I should be back home myself. I've got someone too.
But the lights are low, the music's slow, your lips are soft and sweet. Oh my, I fear that I may be indiscreet.
It looks like we have passed the point of putting up a front.
And I'd be pleased to have you, dear, if that is what you want. Started out so innocent with just a single drink. And now I fear that I may have forgotten how to think. Just a single drink. And now I fear that I may have forgotten how to think.
Ooh. This feels kind of dangerous.
Gave up the fight.
I think that I should tell you, dear, it's only for tonight. Oh no, I won't make the same mistake the next time we meet.
Oh my, I'm so high I may be indiscreet. Oh my, I fear that I may be indiscreet.
She ain't finna get me. I'm talking about this old woodpecker looking joker with her old looking self. Now, in this situation, I would hate to be the angry generic guy number 7. Just talking about how I'm just so angry at Raven Simone because she says something crazy. Y'all, how many times have we seen this? Just sit back, think about it. But what happened? We go back. What Raven said before. Don't label me gay or African American. What happened when she said that? Everybody was talking about it. Everybody was mad, or everybody had something to say when she said that. So then who saw that? Now this was way back October 2014. This is about a dang year ago. Huh. Ain't that something? Who saw that? Well, of course, The View saw that. And you know what's been happening to The View? They've been having them poor ratings. Look at that. The View's poor ratings scarring ABC. Show reportedly hurting cast member Rosie O'Donnell relationship with wife. Oh, look at that. It's ruining people's relationships, and it's just that bad. They're talking about since she got on the show, talking about Raven, it's still bad, but it's like she slowed down the bleeding of the poor ratings. They trying to bring this show back to life. So they gotta have somebody like Raven who they know gonna say something crazy even if she just gonna apologize later on. Come on now. What are these people really talking about? They don't be talking about nothing. Look at The View slams Kelsey Grammer for wearing pro-life t-shirt. What do you got? Would it bother us more if they use guns? Well, yeah, you use a gun to kill the babies. You use whatever else they use to crush the baby's skull and all that crazy stuff that they be doing to kill. You know y'all put a hit on your own kid? That's messed up. It might bother them more if they use guns because they trying to do gun control here, man. So yeah, that's the answer. Yeah, it would. It would bother them more. So jokers ain't talking about nothing on The View. That's why they had to go get this girl here as the new co-host to spice it up. And what they doing on this episode that she said this stuff here, they're looking at an old video talking about like the 60 top ghetto names. This video old as heck. I mean, people was waiting for 50 Cent new album when this video came out. This video came out when MySpace was popping. I'm talking about people were sharing this on MySpace talking about, look at this, it's funny. And now all of a sudden they just watching it. They just now viewing it on The View talking about, we want y'all to see this. And I saw on the bottom of the screen, the show was titled, Am I Being Discriminated by My Name? And they go through the names. It's like Elephant Tisha and Watermelon Drea. They saying that in the video. Link in the description box. You see it for yourself. But what Raven say? I'm not going to be hiring nobody named Watermelon Drea. She said that with her name Raven Simone and with the Night Elf Mohawk. Get out of town, Joker. I almost want to get mad at this girl, but then I say, you know what? This is what she was hired for. They hired her to say things like this. So when they have that little funny body language, thinking like, oh, I'm so shocked she said something like that. I'm like, man, please get on somewhere with that. I bet the producer be like, come on, we're going to need some of those Ravenisms today. Come on, give us what you got. Give me what you got. These jokers ain't giving nothing. That's right. That's why they got them poor ratings. But you know what? I'm going to give you an E for effort.
Well, my daddy left home when I was 3, and he didn't leave much to Ma and me. Just this old guitar and an empty bottle of booze. Now, I don't blame him because he run and hid, but the meanest thing that he ever did was before he left, he went and named me Sue. Well, he must have thought that it was quite a joke, and it got a lot of laughs from lots of folks. Seems I had to fight my whole life through. Some gal would giggle and I'd get red, and some guy'd laugh and I'd bust his head. I tell you, life ain't easy for a boy named Sue. Well, I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fists got hard, my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars, I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man that gave me that awful name. Well, it was Gatlinburg in mid-July, and I'd just hit town and my throat was dry. I thought I'd stop and have myself a brew at an old saloon on a street of mud. there at a table, dealing stud, such a dirty mangy dog that named me Sue. Well, I knew that snake was my own sweet dad from a worn-out picture that my mother'd had. And I knew that scar on his cheek and his evil eye. He was big and bent and gray and old, and I looked at him and my blood ran cold. And I said, my name is Sue, how do you do? Now you gonna die. Yeah, that's what I told him. Well, I hit him hard right between the eyes, and he went down, but to my surprise, come up with a knife and cut off a piece of my ear. But I busted a chair right across his teeth, and we crashed through the wall and into the street, kicking and a-gouging in the mud and the blood and the beer. I tell you, I've fought tougher men, but I really can't remember when. He kicked like a mule and he bit like a crocodile. I heard him laugh and then I heard him cuss, and he went for his gun and I pulled mine first. He stood there looking at me and I saw him smile. He said, son, this world is rough, and if a man's gonna make it, he's gotta be tough. And I know I wouldn't be there to help you along. So I give you that name and I said goodbye. I knew you'd have to get tough or die. And it's that name that helped to make you strong. Yeah. He said, now you just fought one hell of a fight, and I know you hate me and you got the right to kill me now, and I wouldn't blame you if you do. But you ought to thank me before I die for the gravel in your guts and the spit in your eye, 'cause I'm the son of a bitch that named you Sue. Yeah, well, what could I do? What could I do? I got all choked up and I threw down my gun, called him a paw and he called me a son, and I come away with a different point of view. And I think about him now and then, every time I try and every time I win. And if I ever have a son, I think I'm gonna name him Bill or George, any damn thing, but Sue, I still ain't that man.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, right now, in America, there are 106 people named Harry Potter, 1,007 named James Bond, and 8 people named Justin Bieber. There just aren't enough names to go around. There are more than 300 million people in America, but 150,000 last names and 5,000 first names is all you need to name 9 out of every 10 of them. When are we going to run out of names? Perhaps it's already happened to you. If it hasn't, when? 10 years, 20 years, 100, 1,000? When will someone with your exact name become famous? So famous, in fact, that your legacy changes forever to just being not the person people think of when they hear your name. And for that matter, when will every reasonably memorable, pronounceable band name or brand name be taken? When will authors have no choice but to just start reusing book titles? According to Rovi Corp, owner of AllMusic.com, the most used band name is Bliss, followed in order by Mirage, 1, Gemini, Legacy, Paradox, and Rain. In the past, when fewer bands had already been created and you couldn't just Google up every single band, overlap was easier to get away with and one-word band names were plentiful. But now, after years and years and years of band formation, well, we have the who, but we also have the what, the where, the when, the why, the how, and even the. In order to stand out now and have your own unique name, you have to be a bit more creative. Oh, Diarrhea Planet. Or Betty's Not a Vitamin. Which, by the way, is no longer true. Betty became a vitamin in 1994. What about Twitter handles or email addresses? Have we already reached peak username? We already find ourselves often having to use abbreviations, initials, numbers, or just choosing something completely different. Will our children or our children's children Live in a world where the only remaining Gmail addresses are just random strings of alphanumeric characters? Are we approaching a name crisis? And if so, should we even call it a name crisis, lest we use up yet another precious name? Maybe you already share your name with someone famous, but if you don't, how long will it be until you probably will? I mean, new famous people are popping up all the time, faster now than ever before because of the internet, and they are gobbling up top Google search billing. Maybe it won't happen until long after you've been dead, but shouldn't the reservoir of names not taken by notable people eventually run out? Computer scientist Samuel Arbesman approximated how many famous people there are alive today, and I think his calculation will be helpful. You see, he points out that if we allow famous to simply mean being notable enough to have your own Wikipedia page, well, because there are 700,000 living people with Wikipedia pages right now, that means one out of every 10,000 people on Earth today are famous. Assuming at the least that that proportion remains constant, since 255 people are born every minute, that means every hour a future famous person is born. Their name destined to become primarily associated with them. Not everyone else who shares their name. All of those people will be relegated to disambiguation or the postnomial, not the famous one. Luckily, if you do the math, you'll find that even at a rate of one future famous person born every hour, it would still take dozens of millennia for most of us to expect a future famous person with our exact name to emerge. Plus, names change. New ones become popular, others obsolesce. But for fun, let's not focus on names we popularly use and instead look at how many possible names there can be. The Social Security Administration allows up to 36 letters for a complete name. Now, including spaces, 27 letters filling 36 spots with repetition allowed means 3 sextillion possible combinations. That's more than Earth has atoms. So let's refine our limits. How many pronounceable names are possible? For that, I say we look at what Randall Munroe, the author of the fantastic What If, did when asked about naming stars. If you want to give every single star in the observable universe a unique but pronounceable English name, how long would the names have to be? His approximation is really fascinating. If we define a pronounceable word as a word that contains consonant-vowel pairs, we can roughly figure that there are about 105 different such pair possibilities. 105. That's not too much different from 99. So, funny enough, there are about the same number of consonant-vowel pairs possible as there are two-digit numbers. Which means we could give every star in the observable universe a sayable, unique name with just 24 letters. The same number of digits it would take to just number all of them. So the bottom line is, we may each have to give up uniquely owning a word or name that's common today, but the potential number of names that can be made is really hardy. In fact, before we run out of those, our species will likely evolve to communicate in a completely different way. Also, names aren't just labels. A name on a screen, a username, a handle, a screen name, doesn't always act exactly like its owner. Usernames can travel more quickly and more widely than flesh and blood people and do things that their puppeteers wouldn't normally do away from the keyboard. It's called the online disinhibition effect. If you can't see the people you're interacting with and they can't see you, you're all just online hiding behind different names than usual, why hold back? I mean, Clearly such a system can't be serious business. On the internet, no one knows you're a dog. Why be nice or tell the truth? The subreddit Karma Court investigates and uncovers people who may think that the less face-to-face nature of the internet makes lies easier to get away with. Like this person who posted an image suggesting that they'd been single for a year, but had, users found out, posted 3 months earlier a picture of my girlfriend's cat. These behaviors aren't just what humans do when they can be anonymous or can hide behind different names. These behaviors can also be caused by the names themselves. Studies have found that the username you use can impact how you behave. Your own pre-existing stereotypes and expectations of certain words, shapes, colors can be confirmed by your behavior, in the same way that studies have found NFL and NHL players play more aggressively when wearing black uniforms. Studies have also found that the more sexualized an avatar is you make someone use, the more conscious they will be of their own body image. And the more an avatar resembles you, the more correlated you watching it exercise is with you being more likely to exercise more. It's called the Proteus effect. The features of a cyberspace version of yourself, a username, an avatar, can actually change you, the meat space IRL you. Usernames and avatars, then, aren't just handles attached to us. Psychologically, we often interact with them as if they're friends, distinct beings we created. They help us out, but they also can influence us, egg us on, dare us to do things we wouldn't normally do because they offer us protection, entertainment. Some make us feel safe, professional, funny, dangerous, attractive. We want cool ones. The cool ones make us look cool. As we go about our daily lives and vie for attention, we are more and more frequently doing so with another name, and exclusively through that name only. So it becomes quite interesting that we're not going to run out of them anytime soon. In fact, they might run out of us first, and may, in many ways, run us.
That is possibly the saddest national anthem rendition ever played. Looks like Joe Namath's English twin. Yeah. Where's the fur coat, for God's sake?
Okay, we are getting close to the big one. October 25th, Bills versus Jaguars, live from Wembley. Let's take a brief look now, Rog, at the history of the NFL in London.
Possibly the greatest gift America's given Europe since the Marshall Plan.
During the 1986 preseason, the Chicago Bears made the NFL's first transatlantic trip to play in the American Bowl.
Oh, the American Bowl. I can't believe how dated this footage seems already. Looks like this game took place somewhere vaguely between the First and Second World Wars, David.
Hello, Walter.
How are you?
Nice to meet you, man.
Pleasure's all mine.
Who's that?
It's my son, Simon.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Walter Payton clearly has absolutely no idea who this random English bald is. By the look on his face, he thinks it's Prince Charles and his stepson Harry he's signing autographs for.
London, can't get no better than this.
London, you can't get no better than this. Is that Joe Webb? Just wait till he gets a look at Glossop. Or Thickenly under Bottomly, David.
In 2007, the NFL played its first regular season game in London. Since then, 20 teams have made the transatlantic journey.
That huge truck is packed full just with toilet roll, David.
Can't get toilet roll in England, Rog.
It's a sweet setup, huh? Let's enjoy this whole thing, man.
Here are our four favourite NFL moments in England. Number one, on their way to a Super Bowl championship, Eli Manning and the Giants defeat Miami at a muddy Wembley Stadium.
The only Wembley Stadium we have, Rog.
The final score, 13-10. and people in England were so happy to have the NFL in town. They didn't care if they were wearing the jerseys of teams that weren't actually playing.
Oh, Rex Ryan's English brother gets it right in the Giants jersey.
Congratulations, first international win.
First international win.
The Giants went on to win the Super Bowl that season, Super Bowl 42.
Win in England, you win the Super Bowl. It's like Ohio in a presidential election.
Number two, Matt Forte's bilingualism. Chicago running back Matt Forte leads the Bears to a 24-18 victory over Tampa Bay, rushing for 145 yards.
But that was just the prelude for the real MVP, Matt Forte's English accent.
Get him on, mate! Get him on, mate! All right, bloke. Hell of a job, blokes.
Our favourite moment, number three. Tom Brady and the New England Patriots dismantle the St. Louis Rams 45-7. Brady threw for four touchdowns, including this one, to Gronk.
That is proper Gronk, taking our nation's centuries of repression and lack of sexual prowess and rubbing it right into our faces.
Or something like that. Number four,
the kick that was heard round the world.
Just last year, Rog, Matt Prater's 48-yard field goal gave Detroit a 22-21 victory over Atlanta.
And it is good! And the Detroit Lions have come to London and put up another improbable victory.
Most Englishmen, soccer fans to their core, were no doubt totally confused by the Lions celebrations. You can hear them complaining, but the ball went over the bar!
That's how we put on a show for London, baby. Yeah, we do.
The next chapter, almost here.
Riding through the city on my bike all day, cause the filth took away my license. It doesn't get me down and I feel okay, cause the sights that I'm seeing are priceless. Everything seems to look as it should, but I wonder what goes on behind doors. A fella looking dapper and he's sitting with a slapper, then I see it's a pimp and it's crackle. There were people from the city having lunch in the park, I believe that it's called al fresco. Then a kid came along to offer a hand, but before she had time to accept it, hits her over the head, doesn't care if she's dead, cause he's got all her jewelry and wallet.
We're going to play a little Greater Than, Less Than with Travis from Alaska.
Greater than, less than, the numbers are the same. When Travis called in with his list of trish, but it's time to play the game.
All right.
When you hear the first one, it'll make sense.
Okay. It'll make
no
sense.
Need to explain.
Yeah, okay. No need to explain. Go ahead, Travis. Sorry.
All right, you guys ready to play?
Yes. Yeah.
The total length in miles of the interstate highway system in the United States.
Oh, boy.
Versus the number of DUI arrests in California in 2015.
Well, wow. let's not bother trying to calculate.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say DUI.
There's more DUIs.
Arrests. I'm more miles. More
holidays. Oh, wait a minute. I'm going miles. I'm going back to miles. Yeah. I'm going miles.
I say miles of highway.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't. That'd be a pretty terrible place to live if it was more DUIs.
We're all going miles.
Not that it isn't.
Miles.
Okay. Well, there's 47,856 miles of interstate highway in the United States. There were 214,000 DUIs in California.
That's one Mexican construction worker I worked with. That's one dude I worked with back in the day.
I'm moving.
Come on, Jesus.
Wow. Yeah, that's one Mexican dude. Jesus, goddamn Christ.
Oh, that's devastating.
That is. Cops.
This is devastating news.
See, by the way, here's how my brain works. That's not, hey, we got to stop drinking and driving. That's, hey, cops, take a day off. That's how sad I am.
That's like 800 a day.
Oy. Well, they figured out it's a cash cow, and they're cracking down. And it's but believe me, they talk about safety all the time. They don't give a fuck about safety. This is huge money for them.
Yep.
Jesus.
I mean, this is, you know, getting you for a speeding ticket or rolling through a four-way stop is a nice chunk of change. It's good walking around money, but DUI is good cash.
Yeah, that gets you the court
system. That'll set you for a while.
That's big cash. So.
And all the stuff you have to do after, not that I've ever had a DUI, but you have to go to classes and you have to go to, and you have to sign up, you have to pay a registration for all those things. So.
It's all money.
I just saw a girl on Periscope driving drunk.
New at 11, concerned viewers call 911 in hopes of preventing a tragedy. Dozens of people were watching as a Lakeland woman turned the camera on herself and broadcasted live on Periscope as she drove home drunk.
23-year-old Whitney Beal gets right to the point on Periscope.
Driving home drunk. Let's see if I can
DUI. She first lets her followers virtually join in the wild bar-hopping Friday night.
Not that far.
Then they watch as she gets behind the wheel after admittedly far too many.
I am drunk on South Florida Avenue because I'm a drunk person.
She heads the opposite way of her home and gets a few honks when she won't go at green.
Driving drunk is not cool.
This is all unfolding as dozens of people around the world witness what could turn tragic any second.
Oh my God, I didn't know I'd get this many people. I am super drunk in the USA and their light is red.
Thankfully, two of those viewers dialed 911.
I just saw a girl on Periscope.
And not only reported it.
It broadcasts worldwide.
But explained the app that could help police track her down.
Within minutes, they found her driving, flat front tire. She hit the curb again. They pulled her over, and it was just obvious from that point she was intoxicated. They went through the test. She fell and went to jail.
Beal says she doesn't remember much about that night. She also says it was a huge mistake, and she's learning a lesson. Detectives say they are extremely thankful no one was hurt.
The game's up. You're surrounded. Come out with your hands on your head.
Goddamn, I need a drink.
I'm gonna need someone to help me. I'm gonna need somebody's hand. I'm gonna need someone to hold me down I'm gonna need someone to care. I'm gonna rise and shake my body. I'll start cooling out my hair. I'm gonna cover myself with the ashes of you, and nobody's gonna give a damn. Son of a bitch, give me a drink. Somebody give me a goddamn drink. Son of a bitch! Give me a drink. One more night. This can't fit me. Son of a bitch! If I can't get clean, I'm gonna drink my life away. Hey, yeah. My heart is breaking, hands are shaking, bugs are crawling all over me. My heart is breaking, hands are shaking, bugs are crawling all over me. My heart is breaking, hands are shaking, bugs are crawling all over me. My heart is aching. My hands are shaking, bugs are crawling all over me. Son of a bitch, give me a drink. One more night, step in me. Son of a bitch, if I can't get clean, I'm gonna drink my life away.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Most spiritual seekers drive whatever spiritual vehicle they've rented with their foot on the gas pedal. Once you get to psychedelics, you begin asking, where is the brake? Because you have now the power to transform yourself. If the search was for power, you've found it. Now, but you see, searching for answers is the position of an ingenue. It's the journey of the fool. What I assume all of you people have to grapple with in different degrees is the fact that by chance or design or good fortune, you have found the answer. Seeking is over with in this room. But what you have to do now is a much more demanding and grown-up thing. You have to face the answer. And you have to take the measure of yourself against the answer. You said you wanted to ascend into the dragon realms. You said you wanted these spiritual realities to become vivid for you. But now there's nothing between you and it except the decision to make it happen. And where do you come down on that? So when I push things like extra environmentalism and critique of culture and all that, I mean it in a very wussed out sort of way. If I really meant it, I wouldn't be here saying it. I'd just let you all figure it out yourself, and I would go off and be a legend, and you could follow me into it if you wanted. I love things about the culture, but I define this loving of things about the culture as a kind of weakness. I'm not proud of the fact that the highest I can get is to teach at Esalen. I'm not at all proud of the fact that that seems to be where I top out. Had I greater courage, I would go further. But I don't. So I'm hoping that you people, my graduate students, as it were, will sacrifice yourselves on the pyre of going further and report back. The thing is a paradox, and you either live with the paradox, I think, and that contains a certain amount of hypocrisy, and hypocrisy was a word we used earlier. Or you become so individuated that from the point of view of everybody else, you're mad. And I've been that, too. And it's very hard to do it and remain in society. I don't think I could have done it. My episodes of madness occurred, thank God, 700 miles up a jungle river in baboon assholia. But had it happened in Manhattan or something like that, it would have quickly set up ripples that would have inextricably complicated and made my life much more difficult.
Now, go find the others.com.
You are just all up in my cornflakes, buddy.